Hello, and welcome to Kinder Conversations live at 180 House. I'm Catherine.
And I'm Robin. We're the co-founders of Kinda, the women-led neuroaesthetic studio. We work as a bridge between academia and the creative industries, translating insight into creative projects to help art, culture, and technology work harder for people's well-being.
In this series, recorded at 180 House, we have been hosting informal conversations about the rise of neuroaesthetics, the exciting space at the intersection of neuroscience and the arts.
Across six episodes, we're exploring connection and immersion in our daily worlds through interdisciplinary conversations. Each session considers a provocation, asking us to consider new design paradigms through the lens of neuroscience. How can we better use scientific insight to fuel creativity and build experiences with greater meaning and impact?
To answer these questions and more, we're joined by a range of incredible guests from the worlds of art, sound, neuroscience, and of course, yourself. In this episode, Robin will be discussing connection to others, what it looks like in 2023, and why it is a vital and sometimes overlooked tool for well-being. Robin is joined by Dr. Martha Newson, a cognitive anthropologist whose focus is on rituals underlying social cohesion, and Erica McCoy, presenter, DJ, audio producer, and an advocate for mental health and club culture. So, let's head straight in.
So, welcome to our series, A Conversation in Neuroaesthetics. We will kick things off, and I'll start with Martha to give us a little bit more insight into these social collective practices. Now, these are encoded within our very primal nature of being. We naturally want to be together and synchronize with one another, and this has extended back at the beginning of time. Let's hear about what rituals used to look like and where we've come to today with what modern rituals are and why we love them so much.
Thank you, Robin. I feel somewhat in tune with everyone today. It was lovely seeing that collective rise and fall of the breath. And maybe the breath is where it starts, a small infant held by its mother. That heartbeat is incredibly reassuring. It's a sign that they're being physically held. So within our own lives, that synchrony and connection starts at the beginning of our personal time. But if we roll back the clock to the beginning of what we might start to think of as modern human history, and I could at a stretch put that around 100,000 years ago, maybe 80,000 years ago for the sort of emergence of cognitive thinking that we start to see when groups come together and we start to see patterns of modern human behavior, because we needed to stick together. Humans are not adapted to go it alone. That's why hermits who go to live in remote places on their own are really fascinating to us. It's just not possible to survive. We don't have sharp claws. We're not very fast runners. We don't have those skills. What we do have is one another and our ability to connect and understand one another's intentions and have a shared goal and pursue it is almost unrivaled. So one of the ways that we would signal to one another that we have the same goal, that we're part of a group, would be through ritual. And that those kind of rituals would be through synchrony, through sound and rhythm. So music outdates language, for instance. And we actually see that again in our own life course. So babies will start to rock in time and dance before they can walk. They're hum before they can speak. And it's the same in human history, those kind of talents emerge much sooner as a way to unify us, to signal that we're part of the same group.
And so Martha touched on something where we're talking about moving in time with a group, predating language. And so much of the way we synchronize and what happens very naturally is through these nonverbal means. And we really like to talk about these nonverbal forms of communication because we spend most of our days talking. I know that I'm very good at it. Not necessarily talking on stage, but generally having loads to say. But there's an important place for bonding beyond verbal communication. And so there's a term called muscular bonding. You know, this notion of when our actual muscles start to match each other. And this is through movement, through dance, walking together. It's no surprise that when soldiers march, they're marching in time with one another. It helps them be more bonded as a collective whole. And so it's important to think about, yeah, like where we've come from in the rituals, but where we are today. And obviously, if you think about the spaces that you inhabit, where maybe the best example is when you befriend a stranger, but you haven't said anything to them at all. I always like to use the example on a tube car and or a bus when you develop a crush on somebody and you're kind of sad that they get off, but you've never said anything to them. Or at a club. You know, you always make a friend on the dance floor, but you've never said anything to them. And so, Erica, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about club culture and its impact in these spaces.
I love those moments when you dance in together, and then often it will kind of, I don't know if it's the same for men, but often women will end up in the bathroom, they're all chatting, and then all of a sudden you've got a whole new friendship group. and I quite like those moments because it means that we've connected in some way. And even if it's just for that night, you know, you might get a compliment or like a moment where it's just you've been synchronized for a moment. Yeah, I often find that people fall in love on the dance floor. They really enjoy dancing together. And I'm always interested as a DJ to see like what groups come together and how the crowd is moving. There's an element of kind of a little bit of crowd control. So you're like, okay, this is not working. Like for some reason, this particular track is not bringing everyone together. Everyone's gone off to get a drink or gone off to get, have a cigarette. I want everyone back. And then you play a song. And normally the thing that I'll do is play something that's almost a little bit tribal that usually brings people back in. I think it's just like having a beat and like a really strong one. People seem to come back to the dance floor. Our piano is pretty good for that at the moment. But I'm always interested in the genres that are, for some reason, it kind of makes people's brains go all funny and nice and it brings people to the dance floor.
Well, it's interesting. You've touched on so much there. Obviously, there's loads of neurochemicals that are released when you're dancing, when you're bonding. And, you know, there's a sense of euphoria. And actually, when you match in synchrony with other people, it also reduces your threshold. No, increases your threshold to pain. It increases your pain tolerance, actually, through the endorphins that you're releasing throughout the process. But you also touched on, you know, it's really interesting how, as a DJ, you're kind of in control of the space in terms of the gathering. You know, we've all kind of been at a ceremony or the club is a ritualistic space within itself and you're kind of helping mobilize people into certain directions. You talked about this beat, you know, the steady drum beat, and in this nonverbal communication through sound, drumming, we know, is really key and instrumental in terms of actually having us all go to the same beat. Actually, if we all just tap our fingers. So even just tapping our fingers like this together is enough to start to synchronize us. I don't know, maybe I can feel it because I'm on the stage, but I can certainly feel it. And so I kind of like what we're doing here every few minutes. We kind of make sure that we're still synced up and anybody who's had a distracting thought has come back to the group. But Martha's done some incredible work on the impact of these spaces, raves, and the impact of drumming. Probably the best named paper of current existence. Martha came out with a paper in 2021 called I Get High with a Little Help from My Friends. And specifically, it looked at the impact of, you know, these transcendent experiences in raves. And Martha can talk a bit more about this, but there's this term called collective effervescence, which is effectively when we're sharing a space, there's this electricity that moves between us. That makes us more bonded and we transcend. You know, we're unified as one in these transcendent experiences. And usually this word transcend or transcendent is often religious or spiritual in some way, but it doesn't need to be that. It can just be actually mobilizing us to something higher or greater. And so Martha's study looked at the impact of raves on these transcendent experiences and a few mediating factors that help us get there, including drumming. But I'll let you talk more about it and why it's so crucial and commonplace for today.
I think I'll give a little background to how I landed at this rave study, because it's kind of a niche population to work with. Academically, it's not had a huge amount of traction. So the background was that I do all this work on social cohesion, and a lot of it had been with football fans. I'm not a football fan, but I spotted a gap for the extreme levels of commitment and emotional investment and passion found among football fans all across the world, and akin to religious experience, perhaps. So I was the first person to look at extreme forms of bonding among football fans, and we found that fans have personally transformative experiences. They transcend to this sacred-like space. It's a ritual. I worked in a ritual unit at Oxford. So I'd been working on this for a long time. I'd done some great stuff, got a big grant, and I moved on. I was working away from my supervisor. I said this to someone in the audience earlier. The second my supervisor's back was turned, I was researching the rave. Because to me, it seemed like an indigenous setting for these peak religious type experiences in conjunction with psychedelics. So there's a lot of work on psychedelics at the moment that I'm sure many of you are aware of, and the use of ayahuasca. And what I was interested in is how rave is an indigenous practice. It's cultivated over 30 years. It's really long term for a subculture to last so long. We're talking nearly 40 years now. So I looked at whether people who attended raves had these transformative experiences, feelings of awe, and how that might tie into long-term bonding and pro-sociality, doing good for the group. So I looked at a few competitors. I looked at drugs, dance, sleep deprivation, and drumming. We called them the 4Ds. And sure enough, people who engaged in the 4Ds, and we might add a 5D of darkness, manipulating light, so strobe lights. And think about our ancestral past, the use of fire, that flickering light, it's captivating, it holds eye contact. The 4Ds, if you engage with those in a ritual setting and you have these feelings of awe, people were more likely to have a transformative experience, a sense that their life had been changed. That's big stuff. And that in turn led to bonding, not just sort of generally feeling sort of more connected, but specifically to the other people who you'd been through that event with. However, you didn't get that bonding and that sense of transformation if you'd gone through the 4Ds. You'd stayed up all night, you'd got really high, you'd danced till you're exhausted, the drums had sort of popped your eardrums. You didn't get all the benefits unless you perceived it to be a ritual occasion. You had to have feelings of awe. Okay, it had to be set up at the betwixt and between this liminal space, you know, not quite in the normal realm. Without that, you were just exhausted. So that was quite a neat sort of extra finding. And we did find that those people who had the full package were more pro-social. They were more generous, giving more of their own money to help charities associated with the cause.
So when you go to the club, when you go out dancing with your friends, it's not just, you know, something that you enjoy. It's actually really fundamental to your health and your well-being. And not only for yourself, but as we've heard, the way we treat others, donating to groups, we become more caring and kind to people. So don't beat yourself up when you go to bed at 4 a.m. and you're really tired the next day, because actually it's as good as going to yoga. I don't have the evidence to back that up. Go out on a Friday night rave, sleep in on Saturday, stay home Saturday night, go to yoga Sunday morning. But what's interesting and what we love about the work we do at Kinda Studios is bringing together panels like this with Martha and Erica. Martha's doing all the work behind it, and I don't know if you noticed, but they both basically were saying the same thing in different ways. Erica intuitively, when she knows people need to regather, she can see that the energy is kind of moving in a bit of more of a disparate way. And she said she puts on kind of maybe something a bit more tribal with the drums. You know, Martha just said the club and raves are an indigenous practice on their own. And so it's all of these things that we intuitively feel. And what's really beautiful that we're doing, and with scientists like Martha as well, is helping to provide the evidence base to measure these immeasurable things that we all intuitively have felt. You know, that's why we keep going back to these spaces and where we make friends. And so in the current age when, you know, everyone is more disconnected than we used to be, loneliness is a huge issue. I have some stats here. Loneliness increases death by 25%. And loneliness is as bad as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So actually, our need to bond socially with others is incredibly important to how we feel. And so when it comes to club culture and shutting down a lot of these spaces, it's more important than we know to have a lot of these measurable impacts with studies like Martha's in order to do so. And so, Erica, I don't know if you have any more you want to add about some of the things that you've uncovered kind of with mental health and clubbing. And I think when it comes to this muscular bonding, there's a lot of people who don't know how to verbalize how they're feeling in a current moment or don't want to. And the ability to kind of go to a space that's dark, people don't need to see you. Nobody needs to know who you are in order to have that enriching experience.
Yeah. And as well, there's almost a journey of going into a club space or a festival space. So when you are standing outside and waiting in the queue, and then you go through the doors and then you feel the change of the texture of the floor, and then you come into the space and it's getting louder and louder, you're kind of walking into a space knowing that your world is about to change. And for those moments whilst you're in the club, however many hours you spend in there, it's dark, you can dance, no one's judging you, everyone's in there doing exactly the same thing, we're all dancing, and we're all here because we like a common thing. And, you know, I find that the best sort of parties that I've been to has been when there's been like a sense of community already existing. So we've spoken about this in the past, but like, it made me think about it even more, but like, you know, how we dress and our sense of style, and knowing that, like, if I go to a night and there's a DJ, we all know that we all love this DJ because they have something to offer us. And I think that's really special. It bonds us.
I think adding to Erica's point, I strongly agree that we have all of these cues of group membership, our clothes, how we wear our hair, the type of music we listen to, even if from an outsider's perspective, they all look quite similar. Inside we know it. But there's one thing that transcends those potential factions. And we talked about the value of going into a dark space and not being fully seen. You know, there's a bit of safety in that. But because of the morphology of the human eye, we manage to keep the eye connection. It doesn't matter what color your eyes are. We all have a very large white part of the eye. So we can track people's eye movements incredibly easily at quite a distance. And that's why, however much you love your pet, you can't have quite the same eye contact. We can't track them in quite the same way. I have a dog who I love, and he's actually, if he looks around the corner, he's got a bit of white to his eye. And I think that makes him really special. But it's something we have over other great apes, this ability to sort of look where the other is looking and have this nonverbal eye-based communication. I think that's something that comes through even in darkness.
Yeah, so if correct me if I'm wrong, but when you share eye contact with an individual, that helps your brainwaves start to sync up and your mental state sync up. So you don't need to actually go to a club. You don't even need to be on the tube. You don't need to be in a big group. It also happens in dyads, in these communities of just two people. So when we're talking about eye contact with another person, it's actually more important than you think to be able to start feeling into their own physiology as well.
It's really interesting when you look into someone's eyes, when they kind of wander off, that eye contact just goes off for a second. You're like, oh, actually, am I connected to this person? Are they listening to me? You know, all of that's really important for our sense of human connection and community, to be able to like look someone in the eye and like really see them. I often find that, like, in the summer, I hate it in the summer. Like, I've got friends who just wear sunglasses the whole summer And I'm like, take them off. I want to see your eyeballs. I want to see what's going on behind your eyes.
Well, actually, maybe there'd be a really interesting study about people who wear sunglasses in the club. Because if it's dark and we can see the white spaces of people's eyes, I wonder if the people who are wearing the sunglasses have those same measures of connection.
Do you remember the trend for the slatted sunglasses? I mean, that was glasses. You know, there's many reasons that was not great, but maybe that's one.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting as well, Erica touched on, you know, when you walk into the club, you kind of know that you all have something in common. I used to always think of this when I was younger and I went to a gig, how special it was that every single person in the room there had something in common with me. You know, you kind of go in as strangers and you leave as this bonded collective. And it's not only the fact that you have one thing in common, but you've all shared a heart rate. You know, the BPMs within the music, as we said, are really, really crucial to this. And there's also, as Martha alluded to, these experiences of awe. Now, awe is an emotion where you're met with something vast, you know, where you stops you in your tract and really makes you kind of step back. And awe is around us all the time, even just being able to see dancers in synchronized motion with each other. And so awe is a really great way to catalyst us into these cooperative experiences. But really, really quickly touching on kind of digital cooperation between people and digital collective, because you have a community that you started where, you know, people doing the same thing as you, even knowing people doing the same thing as you. So you can talk about the Grow Guide. We know there's studies that are talking about podcast listening. When you listen to a podcast with somebody, or when you listen to the same podcast as somebody, even if you're not in the same space, even if you're not listening at the same time, your heart rate starts to move in sync at the same moments within the listening experience. And that ultimately synchronizes and bonds you. So while digital experiences aren't quite as good in those senses of bonding, which Martha can tell us more about, I think it's important to raise in our world today where we live in a much more digital world and we're all doing more things online. I took an online yoga class last night because it was too cold to cycle to the studio. But it wasn't quite the same one. So maybe you can tell us a bit about the Grow Guide and some of the maybe anecdotes of those sort of group membership that you have.
So I run this company called the Grow Guide, which is all about growing your own food at home. And we have this thing called the Grow Guide Gang, or the Grow Guide Gang. And it's people growing their own food across the UK, kind of coming together and sharing in that knowledge that they're doing the same thing together. It's really impactful, but also kind of, I also work in radio. And so this like idea of podcasting and people being connected is really, it's a big deal. Like over the lockdown, I found that people, especially with audio, for some reason, I think it's because it can be so intimate and it can be, it's really direct, it's in your ear. The communities we formed over lockdown were so important for people's mental health. And I had, I'm sure they wouldn't mind me saying this, but I had a few people come up to me, but one particular person who was really going through it, like mentally was really like had a breakdown. And she said, you know, your radio show helped me get back into reality, kind of helped me get back into life. And it makes you realize how important it is, this collective listening. She could see there was a chat room, just even seeing it. She didn't take part in it often, but even seeing it and knowing that there's people communicating had a really big impact on her mental health and just kind of allowing her to know that there's something much bigger going on than what's going on in her head at that time. So yeah, digital communities are great. And they can be really, really amazing. But yeah, I know there's more to it than that, obviously. But it can be really helpful at first, you know.
100%. Yeah. Basically, the fact is that these shared physical spaces are the best we can do in terms of sharing space within our bodies. But these digital spaces are really great in terms of also connecting with people across the world. So what are some of the studies that you've participated in that you've run in regards to this?
There are two big studies that really speak to Erica's point. I think the first is one that we did during the pandemic with, we had over 10,000 participants in 122 countries. So it really was a global reach, We did find some cultural differences, but the results I'll share are pretty consistent across this very diverse sample. So we found that digital technologies, speaking on the phone, video messaging, and just text-based messaging, they were all good for your well-being. They all helped out. But none of them came close to face-to-face contact, even during peak lockdown periods. You know, when people, even if people felt very vulnerable, face-to-face contact was still strongly affecting their positive well-being. However, that was not the case for young people. Young people's well-being was worse the more they involved in any of the digital technologies. That might be because they used it too much. It might be all sorts of different reasons. It might be because they're sort of still forming those kind of social bonds and not sure who to reach out to or the kind of communication they have. The other group who suffered with video contact were empaths, people who have a high score for how empathetic they are to others. And that might be because it was sort of frustrating to see other people but not be able to touch them or really connect any more deeply. Then another study we ran was with basketball fans in Connecticut. And we looked at people who were at live matches versus watching remotely. And we found that people who watched in person, we were monitoring their heart rate. And when they watch it in person, their heart rate synchronized with those around them. And it's not on a standard heart rate variable measure, but on quite a specific measure, ADL and DET. When people had this heart rate synchronizing with other people, I mean, this just blows my mind that their heart is doing the same thing in this complex way. Those people have feelings of personal transformation, that what we were talking about earlier, the transcendence over a basketball match. And then they became more bonded, but only when it was live and in person. So we can see this special value that face-to-face contact, the eye contact, picking up on those subtle signals from others has on our feelings of sort of long-term connection and transformation.
I think what's really amazing about all these anecdotes is the fact that there's so many options available to us for this lens of social connection. You know, whether you love to dance, even going to a dance class, going to a rave, if you like sport and you go to a sporting match, if you're maybe in the more spiritually minded and you want to go to a ceremony, chant, kirtan, there's so many options available, and it's really all about being with groups and feeling that group membership. And at a time now when there's so much experiences of self and other and disconnection and people being different from you and driving us apart in many ways, it really goes to show the power that's needed in actually coming together as groups. Whatever you're so choosing is, we all have personal differences, and there's multiple ways to really receive these benefits.
Thank you to our guests, Dr. Martha Newson and Eric McCoy, for exploring with us how to design more meaningful cultural experiences together. Experiences that can foster neurophysiological connection to others and become an important tool for well-being. And of course, thank you to 180 House for hosting the session. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Kinda Conversations. You can find out more about the work of our studio and sign up to our newsletter at kindastudios.com.
If you've enjoyed this, please share. And of course, please subscribe so you know when more episodes are released. We also like ratings and comments too.
See you next time.